Hey everyone, welcome back to Keeping Track. Today, I talked to Amy Yoder-Bagley. Amy has seen many sides of the sport, starting in her professional athlete days where she progressed to eventually making the 2008 Olympic team in dramatic fashion and then finishing sixth in the world in 2009 in the 10,000 meters. She also coached at various levels from college to professional athletes to master's athletes. She most recently holds a leadership position at USATF as the Director of Long Distance Running Programs and is also a supporter and mentor to the new women's track club, Heartland Track Club, coached by her husband, Andrew. Together, they hope to not only help professional women athletes chase their goals, but also prepare women coaches as they come up through the system as assistants. Thanks for keeping track. So welcome, Amy. I see Amy's at her office at USATF. And so we can kind of start talking a little bit about your current role, because like I think I have a lot of questions about what you do, what your goals are, what influenced you. So we can dive into your career after this. But first, I would like to ask, like, what are your duties as the director of long distance running? And also, I saw you at the trials. What was it like diving into this job before such a huge event like the marathon trials?
So when things were changing at my last job with the Atlanta Track Club, we were kind of looking at what to do, where to go. And I like coaching and I like working with the elites. Obviously, I know I was a coach at UConn. I was coach at Atlanta Track Club. I coached the training programs. But I also like the admin part of it. Whereas Andrew loves coaching, you know, lives it, breathes it, whatever. I'm also kind of more an events admin type person. So this job, you know, kind of came about, and I have done everything with USATF from, you know, Hershey and TAC and juniors, seniors, coaching. I was on the board. I was on all the committees, AAC, high performance, governance. So I've kind of done all the different things. I even competed at Masters Track and Field, right? And I coached Masters Track and Field. And so I've kind of seen all levels and all sides of USATF. So this was kind of, it was an interesting job that came open, and I was excited to do it. And I've started in September, and I've kind of dove right in. And like you said, I was at the trials and, you know, being on that side of it. And then, you know, I'm mostly roads and cross, but I do help with other things around the office. You know, right now we are doing the vote for the board seat for LDR. So I'm trying to get the voting rosters, you know, all up, getting everybody represented, making sure everybody has a vote for it. And then next will be all the different USATF championships. I'm working on the task force for the road circuit. And then we have World Cross Country in Serbia. And I'm also going to do race walk as well. So I'll also take over race walk starting in the next couple weeks. So lots of fun stuff ahead.
Lots going on. Your bio could have been like minutes longer. So like you have such a big coaching background. I was going to ask, do you miss the coaching? Do you think you'll ever stick your hat back in the coaching ring? Or what do you feel about that?
You know, right now I get to help all the athletes have good experiences at our national championships, help get them opportunities to compete on international teams, you know, go with the international teams and make sure that they have everything that they need. So I still get to be involved with the athletes, and I'm mentoring the Heartland Track Club, you know, mostly distance athletes like Emma Grace, and, you know, going to help them get their mentorship program off the ground for the Track is for Everybody Foundation as well. So I still do a little bit of that. Do I miss standing outside for 6 hours, freezing with four layers of clothes on? Absolutely not.
That's a big part of coaching.
Oh, people are like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, you're really cold most of the day. At least I was.
Yeah, Kurt definitely has like a long underwear set for his coaching days. Him being Canadian, my husband does a lot of coaching, and he's got a good cold weather wardrobe, and his whatever muscles you use for standing are like pretty good in his legs right now.
I can stand all day. You become really good at that.
Expert stander.
Yes, that's for sure.
So I really want to talk about the Heartland Track Club too, but just a little more with the USATF. I guess, like, so you've been an elite athlete who's made teams, you've been a developing athlete in your career, and now you're on the other side at USATF. Like, what's some of the stuff that you experienced in your career that you're kind of taking with you into this position? Like, is there anything that you specifically are trying to change, or anything specifically that you see that, like, maybe wasn't seen before and needs to be addressed?
I think a few things. For example, just, you know, coaches getting involved and trying to have a say for things, making sure that coaches are, you know, thought about in access and what they can do and where they can go. And just also making sure that the coaches have information, because sometimes the athletes get it and they never send it to the coaches. So trying to make sure that everybody has information, making sure that everybody has information with enough time to prepare, especially the marathoners, because putting out stuff at the end, like right now, we need to work on the 2025 Worlds, because it will decide whether people run Boston or Chicago or New York, and where they want to go and what they want to do. So those things need to be done early, and they need to be communicated as quickly as possible. The athletes need to be aware of all opportunities, right, for LDR championships, for the USARC task force. So it's really honestly just communication and trying to get information out as soon as possible, because if there's clear communication, people can plan and people can take advantage of all the opportunities. And I think that's a lot of the reason we have issues sometimes. And also it's education, because World Athletics is changing how they do things, and points and rankings has become more important than it ever was. And a lot of times people don't understand, you know, for example, the men's marathon, for example. I think if more men would have understood that they needed to increase their ranking points, they may have made different decisions on what race to run, what marathon to run, what half marathon to run. I think a lot of people made decisions based on money, and I don't fault that at all. But if you were in the top 10 of our men's marathon and you knew you weren't going to get that time, then I think the next step was, where am I going to get the most points? Where am I going to get the best ranking to put myself in the best position to make that team? And I think education needs to be part of my job, is making sure that everybody understands the road to get there. Now, they literally just changed all these rules in the last year, so where everyone is catching up. You know, it's federations are catching up, and World Athletics changes their mind all the time. I mean, it's, you know, and you just kind of roll with it. A lot of times people say, you know, why didn't you put this information out? And I said, well, because World Athletics or Pan Ams gave it to us last week. And then we have to take that information to the LDR committees. And the LDR committees are made up of volunteers who have jobs. And they just can't turn it around in a day. So, you know, a lot of times it just has to go through committees. It has to go through legal. It has to go through all the things. And it's not something you can just decide in a day, unfortunately. So getting ahead of things and trying to be as reactive and responsive as possible is going to be a huge part of the job.
Mm-hmm, totally. Yeah, the ranking system is a little bit confusing. I feel like as US athletes, we're so used to the, like, get your standard, top three, you go. Like, that's just what ingrained in us. So it's a lot more strategic now and a little uncertain. Like, you know, you would go somewhere else. Like a Pan Am championship gives you lots of points. There's lots of these little things we got to think about now. So that's definitely something everyone's got to know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think just as an athlete, just understanding that there's a lot of things that go into all the decisions, right? Like shoe technology and rules and, you know, just there's so many things, right, as an athlete that you don't pay attention to, but your coaches need to, or your federation needs to. And again, just a lot of education and trying to give athletes as many opportunities as possible is what I want to do. And again, it really is just going to come down to communication and trying to get people involved, because trying to get athletes involved to, you know, be on committees to help make some of the decisions. I think everyone likes to lump USATF into one, but it's a lot of volunteers and organization. And if we could get more athletes involved, then I think some of the decisions that come out would, you know, the athletes might be a little bit happier with, or at least feel like they had a say in it. And so that's another part of the job I want to try to do, is get more athletes involved, you know, get more athlete voices on the committees. Because for 10 years, I was one of the only women's LDR athletes that showed up. You know, I mean, I said yes to all the committees and all the things. And, you know, half the time I was the only athlete on the call or the voice. And USOPC is changing that, right? USOPC wants 33 1/3% of athlete vote and voice in all things. So like the other night, we had to delay a call in a meeting for 40 minutes while I tried to get enough athletes on the call to be able to vote on the next thing. So that's a huge, it's a huge issue and hurdle I'm trying to get over right now with some of the athletes. I'm really pushing to get more involved.
That's a great point. I wonder why, like, do athletes hesitate, or do they not know that their voice is needed? Or what do you think is the hurdle there? Because I have to say, I admit, like, I'm not really that involved in USATF stuff either. And my own side of it was kind of like, I just feel like I'm going to be yelling and no one's going to listen to me. But can you convince us, let us know what the hurdles are.
So I think, I mean, for example, when I was an athlete, it's the coaches didn't encourage you to be involved, right? And I think that's changing a little bit, because I am trying to have more conversation with coaches, and I'm trying to reach out and get coaches' opinions and get people's, you know, just their ideas and be like, hey, this is coming up. What's your thought on this? And I reached out to probably 100 different coaches or athletes last week, and I got the best response I've ever gotten. I probably got 60% response rate, which was amazing. And so it gave me a really good idea of what people wanted. So I can take it back to the committee and say, hey, I pulled all these people and here's what they thought. And I was surprised, right? Because I'm like, oh, I would have probably gone with this, but this is what the athletes and coaches want. So, you know, I think when we do give them a say, I think it really helps. So for example, we need more men and women on the LDR committees, right? And the LDR committees, they're the ones that, you know, vote on site selection for marathon. They're the ones that vote on the selection criteria for cross country, you know, worlds. They're the ones that vote on the selection criteria for the marathon, for world marathon, and things like that. So we need more athletes to show up for those meetings and be on those committees to put their voice in and say, you know, this is how I would prefer to qualify for the, you know, 2025 world marathon. This is how I would prefer to qualify for, you know, for any of the things. You know, this is how I would prefer that the points be done for USARC, or this is how the prize money. So there's honestly a lot of decisions that that get made in these committees that I think the athletes would want to be a part of. So for example, the women's committee meets one Tuesday a month. You know, it's a Zoom meeting, and then the USATF annual meeting, obviously. The men's LDR, they don't meet as often. It's usually more of a email type thing. There's also the cross country council. You know, they decide on site locations for cross country nationals. They decide on the selection criteria for world cross country. The LDR committee also decides on the selection criteria for the world road racing championship. So if you want to make teams and you want to help have a decision on how things are chosen, then being a part of those committees is huge. Now, some of the committees to vote, you have to be a 10-year athlete, which means you had to have represented the United States in international competition, or you had to be in, I think, the top 12 at an Olympic trials marathon, or the top 8 at a U.S. nationals or U.S. trials. It's also the Pan Am Games, World Cross Country, and the Olympics. So if you have done any of those things, that means you're a 10-year athlete, and that means you can vote on pretty much anything, which is huge.
Okay, that's good information. Any athletes listening, myself included, I'll try and be less intimidated. I don't know if my credentials are too old at this point, but sign me up.
You are good to go.
Okay.
You are good to go. You may be getting an email from me really soon. Actually, there is a huge vote, and I need 170 LDR athletes to vote on this USATF board. So if you get an email from me in the next week, I really need you to vote in this next election.
Okay, me, myself, and everyone else. Everyone knows it's good to vote. You got to vote. So let's do it in our own little mini community of LDR USATF athletes.
That's right.
Yes. Okay, so I would like to talk about Heartland Track Club. I was so excited when I read about this in the Fast Women newsletter that your husband, Andrew, is just spearheading this track club in Indiana. You guys are in Indiana now for your job. Can you talk a little bit about how this track club is unique or what some of the goals are? Because it's an all-women's track club and it had some really cool, like, it wasn't just a plain track club, it had some cool elements to it.
So let's see, when I got my job after I retired, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, we started a kind of a we started a club called Distance Divas. This was back in like 2012. And then I started a foundation called Track is for Everybody, meaning every body type. And we would go into elementary schools and middle schools and teach them about all the different track and field events, that everyone could do and participate in, so they try to get more kids interested in track and field. And so that foundation we had to put on hold when I got the job at Atlanta Track Club, because Atlanta Track Club is a nonprofit, and Track is for Everybody was a nonprofit, so I put it on hold. And then when we moved and was starting this job, I just looked up my foundation just in case, and it was amazing because I had 60 days left to either renew it or it went away forever. So the timing couldn't have been better. And so I renewed the Track is for Everybody Foundation and restarted it. And the mission has changed a little bit. Instead of, encouraging, different kids to try different track events, it is now more of a mentorship program for women and girls in sports to keep them in the sport, because a lot of women drop out of the sport early for different reasons. And a lot of it is just lack of mentorship, lack of someone to ask questions to, lack of resources, and mostly just lack of information. So the Track for Everybody Foundation is also going to help the Heartland Track Club, and the women of the Heartland Track Club can be involved in the mentorship program if they want. They'll get stipends for it. And the grand picture, hopefully down the road, is that we can also give money or NILs to college athletes to be mentors for middle school and high school girls to help keep more women in sport throughout their career. Because as you and I both know, it is a long game for women in long distance running. And really, if you stay with it, the numbers are on your side.
Yeah, I love that. Was that sort of inspired by like things that you went through in your career, or is that just something you always thought was important? Can you talk more about that? And I know, 'cause I know you've had a variety of coaching experiences, some great, some awful, so
I mean, it's a lot of it, right? It's coaching. I've coached at all levels. Andrew and I coach middle school, high school, college, and pro. And everywhere you go, there's always a lot of women or girls that start off, as sixth graders, and then you only have a few in eighth grade. There's always a lot that start off as a freshman, and then you're lucky to have a handful by the time they get to senior, in high school. And the same thing with college and even pros, as you know, right? A lot of women, end up retiring for various reasons, whether it's lack of support or information. As you and I both know, there's not much research that goes into women, especially elite women in running. And so I just think a lack of everything all around. And for me, and for Andrew as well, we learned a lot of hopefully what not to do, hopefully what to do right. And it's one of those things where hopefully, if you know better, you do better. And that's one of the goals with the mentorship program, whether we help, the women stay in sports, or we help just give resources to the coaches, because there's a lot of male coaches. Hopefully we can help them, have these answers, or at least give them a place where they can send the girls to get the answers. And whether that's, the website or our athletes or other athletes that we are, giving stipends or grants to help with the mentorship program. Either way, I hope the information can help keep more women and girls in sports. And then another part of it will be hiring intern coaches down the road to get more women into coaching and help give them the tools needed, because we have found that a lot of times people bring on assistant coaches and they don't have they're not given the tools or resources. They're just there running errands or holding a stopwatch, or they're not given a lot of responsibility to learn and grow in that role. So we're hoping to be able to do that as well. So a lot of it is just past experience, what we've seen, and hopefully we can help people make less mistakes than either we saw or we did.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you're the launching other female coaches part of it. I feel like that's not something a lot of places try to do. So I like that you have an eye on that. There was a great quote by, I think it was Diljit Taylor, and she was saying that we need to let the women coaches do more than just like tie the braids and the and like bows in the hair. You know, they need to really be doing the coaching because eventually they want to be head coaches, directors of programs, and things like that. So that's awesome.
I mean, it's great to let them learn how to, make hotel blocks and book the cars and the vans and book the food, but they need to go past that, right? They're not just director of ops. They need to learn how to plan programs and team culture and plan training and things like that. So, but hopefully coaches are getting the whole package, but hopefully we'll be able to do that as well along the way.
Yeah, that's cool. So currently you have a couple athletes there, but they're, I think, do you have three with Allie, Emma, and who else is there?
And so we have Allie Wilson, who's the 800-meter runner. We have Emma Grace Hurley, who is on the roads and will be eventually working her way towards the marathon. And then we have Gemma Finch, who is from Great Britain, and she's also 800-meter runner and miler as well. I've had, funny enough, the two girls luckily have, they've signed contracts, and Emma Grace is she just ran in her ASICS uniform this past weekend. And that was the first, ASICS was the first company that I ran for. So it's great that Emma Grace is running for them. And then Allie just signed with Nike. And, I'll touch on this subject that I had a couple people obviously reach out and say, wow, you let Allie sign with Nike. Well, first of all, the athletes can do what they want. And that's the part of the thing with our sponsorship is the athletes can. They can work with the foundation and get paid and get stipends, but we're letting them get their own contracts because we feel like that is the freedom that they need and they want. And my response to the Nike thing is that the person in charge now of Nike Running, Brett Holt, he was actually with Grassroots Running when I was at Nike, and he's kind of worked his way up through Nike. And when he got the job, I actually called him and said, hey, I'm so excited that you have this job. I really am excited to see where Nike Running goes under your leadership because I really enjoyed working with him when I ran for Nike. And I think he's a great guy, and I think, good things can happen. So for me, it's about change, I think that's happening, change that's coming, and we need to allow people to learn and change and grow. And like I said, if you know better, you do better. And I truly think that they will and they are. And this is the chance that that I hope they take and they go with. And I'm excited to see what happens. If you allow people to change and good things happen, then that's even better. So
Yeah, that's the goal. We don't want to just be like hating someone forever. We hope that especially someone as influential as Nike will, you know,
yes.
listen to the people and change. And I know you'll let them know if they're not. So.
And I do have I think I have a good relationship with a bunch of them there for sure. We work with them with USATF, and they have been really good to the athletes and really good to the organization. So
And it's tough, you know, an opportunity for Allie is an opportunity for Allie. You know, you don't want to ever limit that. I actually think so. We have a little track club here that's a nonprofit in Rhode Island. And we obviously you're always hustling for funding. but it's almost sometimes tough if you go with one big shoe company. Not that they're offering really, but if one was, then it limits what athletes you can have. And you know, the athletes work well together, so you want to have as many good athletes coming as possible, no strings attached. And yeah, there's just two sides to it, you know, when you're trying to put something together like a group that's so many moving pieces.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because we struggled with that for sure. And we've had athletes in the past, and I've seen athletes go through this where it's time for re-signing and the company won't offer them more money, even though they're such a better athlete, because they know the athlete's not going anywhere, right? So certain, if an athlete is with this shoe company and this coach, they know that athlete's not leaving that coach, but why would they have to pay them more? So It's helpful to have a big sponsor to cover everyone, but then again, on that side, it could limit possibilities for each athlete, and that's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to take opportunities from athletes, whether it's, athletes that are within the foundation or athletes, within USATF. That's the last thing I want to do is take opportunities away. My job is to give more opportunities, to find more opportunities, and make sure everybody has equal access to try to qualify for those opportunities.
Yeah, it's definitely something you don't see till you try and, start your own thing, and then you're just like, there's so many clashing sides. So, that's definitely, yeah, you're doing it. You guys are making it work. I feel like we could spend a whole nother podcast on this, but your time as an athlete was like pretty like inspiring too. Do you have so what year did you officially retire, Amy? Was it 2010? 2012.
2012. Yep,
2012.
2012. Yep.
Okay. Did you have like a favorite moment in your career, or a favorite few moments? Like what stands out when you think back on it?
For me, making the team probably stands out. And for me, it was just a mind switch of I went into that week of the trials saying, boy, it'd be nice to make the team. And I was at my chiropractor and he literally sat me up and said, no, you're going to make this team. And he kind of made me say it out loud. And for whatever reason, that was almost the switch that I needed. And I went into it being like, no, I'm making this team. And so I went from this, it'd be nice to do it to, nope, I'm doing it. So I think that was probably one of my favorites. And then coming back in 09, and this is what I told Allie. Like, Allie didn't have the best first, international experience, right? And so I texted her afterwards and I said, sometimes these are the best lessons ever because I went to the Olympics in 08 and I was last. I think I was last, but I was lapped twice in a 10K outside. And so I said, my first experience was terrible. But it gave me the motivation that I needed. And then 2009 was amazing. I barely lost. I was sixth of the world and ran, I was on fire and I had a fire within me because I was so mad at myself for how I ran at the Olympics that 09 was amazing. So I told her that sometimes those experiences are what you need, whether it's a kick in the ass or something, right? It just motivates you. So for me, then 2009 was awesome. Was after that. So goes from the lowest to the highest. And then, as we all end up retiring at some point, whether we want to or not. So.
Yeah, and I love that like Team USA will really wants to fill their roster because they know that experience, that first world experience is so important, even if it doesn't go well. Like just seeing everybody run well, seeing the routine, like it teaches you a lot as an athlete. Like I didn't make the final in my first world championship because I was injured, but still, it was like I'm so glad I went and saw it. Because then the next time I could go, I was like, I know how this works. I know what to do. I know how to travel. I know how to do all the stuff. I know who to bring. I know what I want. Like it's hard to describe, but it can really set you up like right away.
And I feel bad for other countries that only take athletes that are going to make the final. I mean, you are not seeing the big picture of development. Like, it's what somebody does now, their first one, the next year, the next 4 years. That experience, like you said, is huge. It helps you make leaps and bounds where, well, if you're not good enough to make the final, we're not taking you. And then when they do get there, like you said, they could have done so much better just if they would have known.
Yeah, and I think it keeps athletes in the sport too. Like, look at the Olympic trials marathon. Because that time is achievable, so many women are like seeing how good they can be and trying to hit that time. And now, some of those women eventually are gonna, keep going and surprise us and get even better. And they maybe wouldn't even have tried if it was too far out of reach. I think that goes for like knowing you could make a team because knowing they're going to send three. If you're a lower level athlete, that could get you to the next level. Whereas maybe you would have just given up early. So it just trickles all the way down. So good experiences for any athlete who didn't have a good run on their first one. It's
Definitely
pretty
true.
common. Pretty
Yeah.
common.
So bringing up that point, it's another reason to be involved in the LDR committee because, the time qualifying for the trials or how many we let in is a huge thing that the LDR community committee decides on. So that's another thing that if athletes want to be involved in. But the other side of that is we also have to work with the LOCs and will they bid or not, depending on how big we let the field. So it's sort of a double-edged sword with that one.
Yeah, I can see how it almost becomes an unsustainable event to hold mm-hmm. because it just, it looked really complicated. But so many amazing stories come out of it. So yeah, yes. I don't know. I'm torn. There's an ideal size, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yes, there's an ideal size for how the race feels, how the race looks, the stories, the keeping people in the sport, and then what the LOC can afford and what they can do too. So I think we got to find that sweet spot.
Totally. I remember watching Japan's Olympic trials for 2021, and there was like six women on the starting line or something. And I was like, ooh, I'm scared for them. Like, that doesn't look great. But four women or something. Yeah.
That would not be fun.
No. I think their qualifying time for the trials was 2:24 back in 2021, which is insane.
I think for the men, it was the 2:08 for the Japanese men, and they had a huge field. I mean, it was pretty amazing to watch, but we need to get to that. It would be nice to have, you know, that many men under the standard.
That would be, yeah, they're doing something right with their training over there.
I need to figure that out.
So what would you say, looking back on your career, like, what do you wish you would have done differently, if anything? Like, what are some of the lessons you came out with, if anything's like top of mind there?
That's a great question. Well, I had money to go get my master's and I did not do that. I wish I would have figured out how to do that.
While you were competing still?
While I was competing, yeah. Because mm-hmm. when I got done, I wanted to go to PT school, but unfortunately, my science classes, they had to be 7 years old or less, and I think they were 8. And I was not redoing organic chem or physics, so I didn't go to PT school because I was like, no, thank you. You know, I went into coaching and now here, so it worked out well, but it's just funny. You know, figuring out what is doable and what's not with school and what your next plan is. You know, if you want to stay in the sport, great. But, you know, if you don't, then trying to make sure that you're keeping up with you don't want it to override what you're doing, but you want to make sure that you're keeping up with your whatever you want to go into, right? And make sure that you have, you know, your stuff isn't going to expire or, you know, like testing dates and things like that. You know, how many hours that you need, when the hours expire, all those things. That would be one of the things that I would, you know, go back and maybe relook at. Towards the end of my career, I was offered a really big contract, but again, I would have had to leave my coach. Hindsight, maybe it would have been an okay idea to do that.
Was that when you were with Alberto?
Yeah. So, but you never know, right? I mean, and you know, at the time I was told that I wasn't going to be cut and then I was, it's just one of those things, right?
Yeah, and that whole situation is hard too because you're running better than you ever have. So you feel like you can't leave a situation, you know? So I feel like that's a lesson for athletes too, like not to feel like you can't, it's you, you know, you're good and the guidance helps, but.
And I think especially what I want to mentor the women that we're working with is you have to advocate for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be okay with, speaking up for yourself. It may feel hard at the time, but it's really something that that you're not going to regret doing later. Anytime you stick up for yourself, anytime you speak up and advocate, I don't think you're going to, it may feel hard. It may, you know, give you a stomach ache and anxiety, but at the end of the day, I don't think you're going to regret doing that.
Yeah. And fortunately now we have like things like Safe Sport, and I don't know how much jurisdiction Safe Sport has. I know they're trying, but at least the education piece is there because the athletes shouldn't have to be the ones who are policing people, or not policing, but like protecting themselves, I guess is what I want to say. So it's good now that the systems are starting to plug that in as best they can. And I would love to see something like that for the NCAA even, because I think Safe Sport's only for our federation, right?
Technically, yes. And even really only in the US. I mean, outside of the country. So, for example, if someone's banned here, they could technically go coach in other countries. You know, they couldn't come back here and we wouldn't give them a credential for things here, but they could go coach, you know, overseas and go to World Athletics and the Olympics and stuff like that. But in the US, it would definitely be under our jurisdiction. And good or bad, I'm kind of now the safe sport keeper at our LDR championships. So I'm the one that is checking credentials and checking, you know, making sure everybody has a background check and safe sport. So with the LDR championships, that's kind of my job at the moment. So that's kind of fun. I feel like the person at the Disney rides that said, "Sorry, you're not tall enough. You can't ride."
Yeah. Well, they weren't really cracking down on it, I suppose, before. You would see people just kind of like assume no one would check a credential and then they could still get in. And you'd see coaches in the stands that you're like, weren't you banned for like various things? So I
Yeah,
guess that's good.
it's starting to be, you know, USOPC and Safe Sport, they're both really starting to monitor things a lot more. You know, for example, there have been people that are working with elite athletes for years, and everyone just assumed that they had all their ducks in a row, and then when I look it up, they do not. So, you know, now I have to go and ask people to do these things that would just kind of assume they were done in the past. And it's not that we don't trust them to do it, it's just everybody has to, you know, go through the same thing. Because again, it's, you know, 1 or 2% of the people in the world that ruin it for everybody else. But you never know what's behind closed doors. So we just have to be careful.
Yeah. And I think there might be some updates coming sometime in the future about women's health to safe sport someday. Maybe that's a pie in the sky thing, but continuing education can't hurt as a
That'd be
coach.
amazing.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So awesome. Well, Amy, thanks so much for your time. We usually ask one more generic question at Keeping Track, but it can lead to some interesting answers.
All
And
right.
it's just, as Amy Yoder Bagley, what do you not get to talk about a lot in interviews, or is there anything else you want to shout out besides Heartland Track Club? You can leave it here if it's from your experience, if it's something you want to support, whatever it is, whatever comes to mind.
I mean, Heartland Track Club will be launching a lot more stuff in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, stay tuned for that. I'm excited for, you know, what the women can do and what we can do, you know, long term. I think it could be great for mentorship and women's coaching and keeping women in the sport. And other than that, I just want people to get involved so that their voice is heard. And since I am the director of long distance running programs, if you ever need anything, just give me a call and that's my job to help you either find the answer or help you get it done. So.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Amy. And thanks for all your organizational work and all the things that you've done and set up. You're a powerhouse. So it was great to
Oh,
talk
well,
to you.
thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Molly.
Keep track, keep track. Keep track, keep track.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.